Yatha
as
Gandhasya
Gandhasya
Aparama
Aparama
Bhume
Bhume
of earth
Cha
Cha
and
Na
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 Bhava
Bhava
Existence
Existence Rajite Gata
Rajite Gata
Separate
Separate
Apam
Apam
Water
Water
Rasaya
Rasaya
Taste
Cha
Cha
and
Yata
Yata
of intelligence,
Parasha,
consciousness,
spirit,
cha,
cha,
and.
Translation by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. As there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of the water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. Translation responsibly. As there is no separate existence of the earth,
and there is no separate existence of the earth,
and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence, of intelligence and consciousness. The example is given here that anything material has an aroma. The flower, the earth, everything has an aroma. If the aroma is separate from matter, matter cannot be identified. If there is no taste to water, water has no meaning. If there is no heat in the fire has no meaning. Similarly, when there is want of intelligence, spirit has no meaning. So I'm also going to read the next verse, which is text 19. The translation of that verse is, hence, even though he is the passive performer of all activities, how can there be any freedom for the soul as long as material nature acts on him and binds him? So again, the purport by Prabhupada, although the living entity desires freedom from the contamination of matter, he is not given release. Actually, as soon as the living entity puts himself under the control of the modes of material nature, his acts are influenced by the qualities of material nature, and he becomes passive. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Kriyamana Nirgunaya, the living entity acts according to the qualities of the modes of material nature. He falsely thinks that he is acting, but unfortunately he is passive. In other words, he has no opportunity to get out of the control of material nature, because it has already conditioned him. In Bhagavad Gita, it is also stated that it's very difficult to get out of the clutches of material nature. One may try in a different way to think that everything is void in the ultimate issue, that there is no God, and even if the background of everything is spirit, it is impersonal. This speculation may go on, but actually it is very difficult to get out of the clutches of material nature. Devahuti poses the question that although one may speculate in many ways, there's liberation as long as one is, there is liberation as long as one is under the spell of the material nature. Devahuti poses the question that although one may speculate in many ways, where is the liberation as long as one is under the spell of the material nature? The answer is also found in Bhagavad Gita 7.14. Only when one surrenders himself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Mamevam Yom Prabhatante, can one feel free from the clutches of Maya. Since Devahuti is gradually coming to the point of surrender, her questions are very intelligent. How can one be liberated? How can one be in a pure state of spiritual existence as long as he is strongly held by the modes of material nature? This is also an indication to the false meditator. There are so many so-called meditators who think, I am the Supreme Spirit Soul. I am conducting the activities of material nature. Under my direction, the sun is moving, the moon is rising. They think that by such contemplation or meditation, they can become free. But it is seen that just 3 minutes after finishing such nonsensical meditation, they are immediately captured by the modes of material nature. Immediately after his high-sounding meditation, the meditator becomes thirsty and wants a smoke or a drink. He is under the strong grip of material nature, yet he thinks that he is already free from the clutches of Maya. This is the question of Devahutis is for such a person who falsely claims that he is everything, that ultimately everything is void, and that there is no sinful or pious activities. These are all atheistic inventions. Actually, unless a living entity surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead as instructed in Bhagavad Gita, there is no liberation or freedom from the clutches of Maya. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Chana Shri Adhaya Harshvasti Gora Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare. The clutches of Maya, the freedom from material nature, this is what Sri Prabhupada is discussing here. In the first part of that purport, that Prabhupada is saying that an individual puts himself in this position. Nobody else is responsible for this. We put ourselves in this material position. We're the only ones that are responsible for the mess that we're in. We're in a conditioned situation, a condition. We've been conned into being here in this material world. Somehow or other, we thought this was a good thing, that we were actually going to enjoy for ourselves, but in actuality, we've been conned. Material nature has hoodwinked us to think that this is actually our real existence. And it's stated that it's only our dedication to the Supreme that will allow us to escape from this material prison, pent-up prison. And it's a very comfortable prison, but it's nonetheless a prison house. Sometimes I get the opportunity, as you know, to go and do some chaplaincy work in the prisons. And these prisoners have the best arrangements. They have pool tables, they have table tennis tables, they have weightlifting. They have everything, but they can't get out. Stringent rules on how to get in and out of this place are really, really strict. And there's no way, unless you have authority, that you can get out of this place. So this is us. We're trapped in this material world. And there's no escape. So even we stated in this report that sometimes the materialists will think there is no God. And this was really a big thing in the early 20th century and right through the 20th century, where people were saying that God is dead. God doesn't exist. But now somehow or other the scientists are coming to an understanding that there must be some sort of creative intelligence. So as Prabhupada is pointing out here, that even though they say there is no God, now they understand that there is some spiritual aspect, some metaphysical aspect to existence. And still they don't give credit to God. They say, yes, there's spirit, but that spirit is impersonal. So this is what Prabhupada is mentioning right back here in this part of the purport that Prabhupada is saying. So there's no liberation as long as one is under the spell of the material nature. This is really the crux of it. As long as we're under the spell of material creation, there's no getting out. And this is, again, as I mentioned in previous lectures, this is really the trouble of an addict. An addict is one who cannot give their addiction to a particular thing, whether it's drugs, whether it's sex, whether it's food, or so on and so forth. They're addicted. They're completely addicted. And to actually break from that addiction, you need somebody else's help. It's very difficult for a person to actually release themselves from this addiction. So Prabhupada here in this purport is pointing out this verse from the Bhagavad Gita 7.14, Devi Esha Gunamaya Rama Maya Durati Jaramani Ramaya Durati Jaramani Maya Etam Taranti Teya. That verse states that this divine energy of mind, Krishna says, consisting of the three modes of material nature, those shackles that bind us, is difficult to overcome. Very difficult to overcome, but those who are surrendered unto me can very easily cross beyond it. So this is the point for one to surrender. It's a very difficult thing for us to do. The purport that Prabhupada gives is really interesting because he gives a really interesting and clear analogy that we can use in our preaching. Another meaning for guna in there is a deviation, guna mai, and another meaning for guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. So that's our shackle, that's our addiction. A man bound by the hands and feet himself cannot free himself. So if you're tied with your hands and feet, you can't free yourself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. So that person that hasn't got the chains and the ropes has to be free from those ropes. Therefore, only Krishna, or the bona fide representative of spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be free from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service or Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of illusory energy, can now order his insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. So this is the wonderful thing. Krishna has the potency to say, that person is trying to get out of this material world. He's like the commissioner of a prison. We can actually say, you've been a really good prisoner, we'll let you out. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent laws of material nature. So we have to somehow or other dedicate ourselves and focus on this connection with the Supreme Lord. Devahuti, in this whole section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is asking very intelligent questions, which questions that apply our intelligence in searching for the truth. So this is required. Everybody has intelligence. It's how you use that intelligence. Some people say, you know, a scientist or an academic or somebody that's great in literature is very intelligent. But is he really? Real intelligence is finding out and understanding that we're in a prison house, we're stuck here. So Prabhupada mentions also in this purport that there are so many meditation techniques that proclaim to give a person freedom from material bondage or freedom. And this is actually a joke. And every one of us over history, you know, sometimes get conned into these different so-called meditation techniques. As you know, prior to being a devotee, I was also involved in a meditation technique which I felt conned. It was more a process of just relaxation and ultimately there was the promise of freedom or enlightenment, but actually nothing came of it. And recently on Facebook I noticed that there was an advertisement for this same organisation, still going. After 40 years they're still going and they're making inroads. They don't claim anything, they just guarantee you that you'll have peace, that you'll have some sort of tranquility in your life, that it's non-sectarian, you don't have to perform anything, you don't have to change your lifestyle, you just have to perform this meditation. Now the person that was presenting it, when you see his face, now this is a practitioner that's been following for about 40 years. He was a pasty-faced looking guy, and actually there was no shakti, no potency in the person at all. He was really blank and dark-faced, and not dark, just grey. He didn't have that effulgence. That even the devotee at a very early stage has that effulgence about them. There is a sparkle in their eye. There is a charismatic appeal about a devotee. You know, like even in our day-to-day work, we may be working in our office and we may be working within the broader community and somebody may not even know that you're a devotee. But somehow or other, they sense there's something different about you. You know? You look different from other people. And Prabhupada used to emphasize this quite a lot when he saw the bright faces of his devotees. He was so proud of the bright, effulgent faces of his devotees. And that's the process of Krishna consciousness. When we link ourselves with Krishna, when we actually follow this process of chanting, actually what happens is we become very effulgent. We become very radiant. And because that is because of a love factor, the bhakti, we actually are developing our love for Krishna. And when we develop our love for Krishna, it automatically exudes from our person. You know, even in a mundane way, when a person first falls in love with the love of their life, you know, they're effulgent, they're dancing around, they're all really happy. That's a limited, but when a person actually falls in love with Krishna, that's an overwhelming experience that nothing else can compare to it. Unless you have that personal contact with the Supreme Lord, it's just like any other meditation technique is absolutely useless. I remember as a young man, way back, before I became a devotee, Western boy who was searching very much and going to all these different gurus, and much the same as Narayani Mataji was giving class. We went in the 70s, there were so many, there were heaps. And I was searching, and my friends were up and I were all searching. And we went to everybody, but it just didn't hit. I got conned into one, and I had to pay out a lot of money for it, but it just didn't hit. But for a Western boy, the time that I remember specifically, the time that I actually fell in love with Krishna. Now, I was a Western person. I was brought up in a Christian sort of tradition. I wanted to know God. That was the one thing that was my saving grace. I sincerely wanted to experience truth, and I knew I was trapped in this material world. I wanted to get out. So I remember sitting up in my bed at night, I'm praying, please God, get me out of here. This was really something that I wanted. And in a very short period of time, doing these different meditation techniques, somebody gave me a picture of Krishna. I still have that picture of Krishna. It's up on that wardrobe. And that picture of Krishna, I saw his face and I saw his eyes and I thought, that's God. And straight away, I fell in love with him. And then there was a song also at that stage, you might remember it, Ravi Shankar's wife or daughter of somebody saying, I am missing you, oh Krishna, where are you? Can you remember that? That was on the radio. And I heard this and I thought, my God, yeah, Krishna, I'm missing you. And then George Harrison, again, he linked the two. You know, because of my Christian upbringing, you know, when he introduced My Sweet Lord, that was it. That was the link. So it's the same God for both the Christians and the Hindus and everyone, My Sweet Lord. So I used to play this over and over and over again. And then we eventually came to Krishna consciousness. So the ecstasy in the devotee's face, the love in the devotee's face comes about because of their love and sincerity towards Krishna. And it's infectious. Prabhupada also mentions in this report that no real change takes place in some of these other practices of meditation. And this was obvious in this person's face. And I've seen this so many times in our interfaith dealings. And I mean, I know this is recorded, but there are many times that you go to different interfaith functions and people put on the garb of a spiritual person. They put on the garb of a guru or a teacher. And then in the end you find out that they have so many material attachments that they can't give up. So they espouse that liberation is the way we have to free ourselves from the bondage of this material world and so on and so forth. But in actuality, they themselves are bound up. Prabhupada points out here the impersonalist meditator needs a smoke or a drink. But when you factually see that, it's quite amazing. In the early days, also Bhakti and I, coming from a Christian direction, we were wanting to somehow or another fit God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, in the tradition that we were born in. So we thought, as Bhakti and Bhakti, Bhakti birth and Bhakti age, we thought, okay, well, we can apply this principle of service to the Lord in our own tradition. And so what we'll do is we'll go to the Catholic priest and we'll do some service in the church. We said, listen, we want to render service in your church. First of all, the priest was completely astounded. You want to do what? And then, we want to do service. Can we clean the pews? Can we sweep the floor? Can we do something? You know, we want to serve God. And he looked at us quite perplexed. And he said, yeah, okay. So then, because we didn't want to, we didn't know how to channel it yet, we weren't into Krishna consciousness at that stage completely. So then he said, well, I'll leave you to it. What was it again? He said, I'll leave you to it. I've got to go, don't I, or something?
I think the first response was, well,
you know,
eight
kindness of coming to do that. Yeah, that's right. And then he said,
there's still a bus up there, we can do that.
That's right. And then he said, well, I've got to go now. And
what was it? He wanted to know why and we started to...
That's right. We started to explain to him that we want to render service to God. Yeah, and then the principles of devotional service, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no alcohol. Well, the priest couldn't believe this, you know, he said, no, I need my whiskey. I need my whiskey to get through the day. So this was it. So he was espousing that he was a spiritualist, that he was encouraging people to go to heaven and follow Jesus, but then in the end he was a non-drinking whiskey. Similarly, and again, prior to that even, there was always a disappointment in the people that I met, all these different gurus and teachers and stuff. Even when I left school and I went to the missions, the Christian missions, to become a priest and a brother, again, I was just so disappointed because I saw these men who were espousing their great missionaries, but then in the end they were fornicating, they were alcoholics, they had so many different vices. So this is the unfortunate situation. To the extent also that recently one so-called guru that we were very much connected with, he fell down and it was revealed that he had sex with all his congregation for many, many years. So, and he's still going. So it's quite interesting that Prabhupada is mentioning this in the purport, that actually, you know, there's so many attachments. When you don't have Krishna, you can't get out of the clutches of material nature. So this is that freedom. So we need real Krishna conscious intelligence, just like Devahuti. We need to ask the right questions. We need to really find where is the truth. As a devotee, we have to also be mindful not to misuse our intelligence. When we get to Krishna consciousness, when we finally make it to this place where the truth is being given, we have to make sure that we don't misuse this intelligence, that we actually use Krishna consciousness and to our greatest benefit, to serve and love Krishna and to get out of this material condition. But sometimes, because of our conditioning, because of our addiction to this material world, we pose these questions to ourselves that perhaps I can get a better position in Krishna consciousness. So this material connection, this material attachment comes in again. You know, I need position. Maybe I could be a temple president. Maybe I could be the temple commander. Maybe I could be the head pujari. Maybe I could be the GVC. And so this is then still a binding thing. The other thing is that name and fame. Prabhupada talks about name and fame. Maybe I could be the best kirtan leader, or I'd be so known throughout the world for my kirtans. This also is not the use of right intelligence. Or let me use the money that I've got for Krishna and use it in my own way. Again, this is also not correct. And the other one is, let me be a powerful figure within a congregation so I can dominate people and direct people. So these are things that we also have to watch. And our intelligence has to lead us back to this understanding that we're simply the servants of the servants of the servant, dasa dasa and dasa. So this other game of power and politics and name and fame, we leave that up to the politicians. And believe me, they are totally into this name and fame. Politicians are just known for wanting power and so on and so forth. They'll do anything. But the humble devotee simply wants to serve. Simply wants to serve Krishna. Krishna consciousness is simple if we make it simple, if we have simple intelligence. We simply follow the authorities. It's a really simple structure. We follow the authorities and do the service and that is assigned to us and follow the principles. This is exactly what we have to do. There's no separate enjoyment apart from Krishna. No separate enjoyment. Everything that we do, every facet of our life that we do has to somehow or other be linked to Krishna. And that could be anything. Like even we're just going through the whole Christmas period, you can adapt that to Krishna consciousness. You know, sometimes it's mentioned, and I've mentioned this before in class, sometimes our kids come home from school and say, why don't we have a Christmas tree? Well, you can have a Christmas tree, just add Krishna to the Christmas tree. We have a Krishna tree. And what we do is you can get these little frames nowadays, apparently. Did you ever find those little frames? No. Well, we used to get badges. You know, you had those Krishna badges with Jagannath and Baladev and Krishna and Prabhupada. And we decorated the tree with tinsel. Yeah, we had tinsel, we had lights, but then we had Krishna all over it as well. It became our Krishna tree. So the kids loved it. And so this is a really important thing. So you can Krishnize anything. You have to put Krishna in the centre of the earth.
But we also have Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Understanding the true meaning.
Jesus. So we explain to the kids that Radha and Krishna, and then Jesus is the Son of God.
Yeah.
So explain in the right context.
Yeah, so they have the right understanding. Thank you. Exactly. So you can Krishnize anything. You can make anything Krishna conscious. So there is no separateness from Krishna. And when we have that attitude, that is the right path for liberation. That is cutting the ropes of our attachment to material nature. Krishna is not our order supplier. In the same token, we don't have to take that attitude of Krishna, you tell me what I have to do. This is, I want this or I want that. The Krishna actually is our order supplier. That is also not our position. We simply ask, please give me service. We have the Christian prayer that people recite so often now, Father who art in heaven, and that catchphrase, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Give us our daily bread. So a lot of people in the Christian tradition really literally take that as literal. Give me material facilities so I can exist in this material prison house. Give me the material, give me my bread, give me sustenance. But actually what it means is give me spiritual sustenance. Give me the opportunity to serve you. That's what's meant by that prayer. It was actually a prayer that was already there prior to Lord Jesus. That was a prayer that was a Jewish prayer that Christ adapted. So this prayer of giving us our daily bread is this point of actually encouraging the person to be more spiritually attuned. Give me the opportunity to serve you. So this is what's required. Unalloyed, selfless service to God. Bhakti. And it's all done with love. We do it because we love Krishna. So this freedom is a big thing. In the material world, freedom is a huge thing. There are songs about freedom, songs of freedom. You have Amazing Grace. Anytime there's some sort of function, they start singing Amazing Grace. My Lord, please free me. You have people back in the 70s like Bob Marley singing Freedom. And just recently, George Michael passed away. He had that big hit, Freedom. There's always this understanding that people want to be free. Free from suffering. Free from the burden of this material world. And Rambaru would back this up, as a chaplain, all you see is people suffering, and they want that relief from suffering. But they're not responsible for the cause of their suffering. They don't want to take responsibility for the cause of their suffering. They understand that they're suffering, and they're praying, please, my dear Lord, please stop this suffering. But then in the same token, they don't take the responsibility of why they're suffering. Sometimes, with the Hindu community, You can touch on that. You can make them understand that. But generally for the broader community who haven't got real knowledge of existence, about reincarnation and karma, very hard for them to understand this point of suffering and being attached and not taking the responsibility for the suffering itself, why they are suffering. So Krishna says that trying to enjoy separate from him, it is not the answer. You have to have that connection with Krishna. You cannot be the doer. You have to understand you're not the doer. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly explains that. Jama kama chame divyam. Unless you know me, unless you know my activities, unless you know about me, you can't get out of this material. But if you do know about me, then liberation is there for you. The gates of the prison are open and anyone can go back home, back to Godhead. So this is really interesting. So we have to use our intelligence, how we actually approach the Lord. with intelligence, that the only thing that we want is dedicated service to Him, and that will give us relief. So, we can't be unintelligent. Prabhupada gave this really wonderful story one time about this old lady. There's this old lady who used to live in the forest, and her business was to collect wood in the forest. And she would collect all this wood, all these sticks of wood, and she would sell it in the marketplace. And so she would collect all the sticks of wood and she would place it on her head, and a big load of wood, and she'd go walking to the market. And as she's walking to the market, this load of wood fell off her head. And she prayed to God, "Oh my God, please help me. You know, that the wood has fallen on the ground." And all of a sudden, by divine arrangement, Krishna was there. And the lady said, "Oh Krishna, please help me." And Krishna says, "Yes, what do you want?" "Oh, please put all the wood together and place it back on my head." That's not proper use of intelligence. The Supreme Lord is there. She could have asked for anything, but she asked for, to take up this burden again, this struggle of material existence. This is Prabhupada's story. So it's unintelligent. So we have to free one from this material bondage. It's interesting. An intelligent person understands, when we come to Krishna consciousness, an intelligent person understands that the foremost, foremost thing for a person to do is to serve Krishna. How do you serve Krishna? Prabhupada pointed that out in this purport and also in that purport from the Bhagavad Gita. He needs someone that is not bound up by the ropes. So who is that personality? It is the divine personality of Srila Prabhupada. Personality and his representatives, and they have the opportunity to actually liberate one. What is it that Prabhupada says? There is no liberation of freedom from the clutches of Maya unless one is attached to Krishna, one connects with Krishna. So Krishna is the one that we have to serve. We have to serve him with all our hearts and our soul, everything that we can do. There's another story about Prabhupada, where Prabhupada got this instruction to serve from his spiritual master. And that was at Radhakund, after Prabhupada had taken initiation, and he met with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada, what's my duty? Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta had said, "You have to go to the West and distribute books. Give this knowledge to the West." That was his captivating instruction to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta at that stage, was very perplexed about the way the Gaudiya Math was going, in that with not the proper use of intelligence, impersonalism was starting to slip into the Gaudiya Math. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was very upset about that. He was saying, "Look, I would prefer it if people would sell the marble off the walls and print books and present God consciousness to people instead of you know, having this infighting and this impersonalism." So he was dedicated on spreading this knowledge. And so he gave the mission to Srila Prabhupada to go and disseminate this knowledge to the West, to the Western world. But Prabhupada was such a great preacher that not only did he achieve that in the Western world, but he achieved it for the whole world. And so this is the wonder of Srila Prabhupada. So, and you know, Bhaktisiddhanta's efforts and desire that books would be going to be distributed, Prabhupada maintained that, and his emphasis was for all his disciples to distribute as many books as they possibly could. And so he had these Christmas marathons where the devotees here did exceptionally well in distributing books. But it should be something that keeps on going all year round, to disseminate this knowledge. Prabhupada wants to preach all over the world. So the devotees have to use their intelligence to present the science of Krishna consciousness more and more. An emphasis now is that somehow or another we also start again to redirect our attention to the Western people. People that are not necessarily of Indian body, that we somehow or other make that connection again with the Western people, that they also understand the science of Krishna consciousness. Just as a young man, myself, when I was 18, 19, when I came across that picture of Krishna, I realized that that was the truth. So it's not foreign to a Western person. There are so many people that need to have this Krishna consciousness in their lives. They need this emancipation from the material clutches. There is a verse in Bhagavatam that states in the first canto, chapter 4, verse 12, those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development and happiness of others. They do not live for any self-interest. So we have to put our selfish interests aside and just really focus on how we can actually help the community. So it sometimes means, just like in the marathons, it sometimes means getting out of our comfort zone, really actually breaking out of our comfort zone to actually approach someone. Like, say, for example, I've been, you know, talking to people, and we've put signs up everywhere about the 50th anniversary magazine and how this is a great tool for actually presenting Krishna consciousness to the broader community. And I just want to know how many people here, if I can have a show of hands, who has actually bought some of these magazines and distributed them freely to any of your neighbours or friends or people that are not in our association? Anybody? Yeah, terrific. Yes, Prabhu. Anybody else? Yes.
We could do more.
We could do more. This magazine was designed specifically for the purpose of encouraging people to understand that they're not this material body, that they're a spirit soul, and that there's a message in there that can actually liberate them from this material world. And the onus is on us to actually present that to people. We still have thousands of these magazines, but it's incumbent upon all of us to actually take up that mission of buying 10, 20, and saying, okay, this week I'm going to give 20 away. You buy them for $2 each. Okay, so buy five, $10, and go and distribute them to the shopkeeper, to this one, to that one. Spread this knowledge, because people are suffering. People haven't got a clue. They are trapped in this material network. And we have to, somehow or other, we have that mission from our spiritual master, just as Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj instructed Prabhupada, go and save the Western world, and Prabhupada in turn pleased his spiritual master and saved the whole world. So now we have to help Srila Prabhupada and bring this knowledge more and more to those people as well. This is the method to do it. We don't have to say very much, we don't have to do very much, we simply have to make that effort of buying some of the magazines and then going and distributing them free. And that's how this science will be disseminated, slowly, slowly. Prabhupada was an exceptional personality, if you really think about it. For us, it may seem, to go and distribute a book or to give a magazine to somebody, it may seem really difficult. When you think about it, Prabhupada came from a land of India at that stage, back in the 60s, and he had no real idea about what was going to confront him in the West. You know, he really didn't know the language properly and so on and so forth. And so, but he came without anything, any money in his purse or anything. He came to preach. And this is now incumbent upon us. Even though, you know, we may not feel that comfortable talking to a person that we don't know, we should make that endeavour. We can't become trapped again in a sort of material nature by being too comfortable in our devotional service. Sometimes, you know, when we've got the deities here and we've got our associations and we've got our friendship, we've got the Krishna, but sometimes we have to break that comfort barrier. Everything is too comfortable. And Prabhupada was a person who always said, Krishna consciousness is not for the lazy fellow. We have to actually make an endeavor. We're comfortable in our Krishna consciousness. We've got lovely association, we've got beautiful deities. We want to give that to other people as well. So this is very, very important. And we have to use our intelligence, our Krishna conscious intelligence. How do we promote and how do we disseminate this knowledge more and more? We have to work with them. There's a cynical distinction between, and this is common in our culture at the moment, you've heard it when you talk to people, when you're teaching people, that there is a difference between spirituality and religion. This is what people are saying now. When you ask people, are you religious? No, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. Okay? So what does that actually mean? You know, I'm spiritual. We are spiritual as far as devotees are concerned. We are not religious as such. You know, we can't allow Krishna consciousness to become just a mundane religious. We are a potent force, a spiritual force, to release people from the clutches of material nature. Each one of us that has been given the pass to get out, because you will get out. Every one of us here sitting in this room is going back home, back to Godhead, no doubt about it, because you've taken the path. Krishna is now taking control. He's already talked to the commissioner of the prison, and you're going to be made able to get out of here. This is the guarantee. You are safe. Don't worry about anything. Just do my bidding, do my will, and Krishna will take care of us. If we follow the instructions of our authorities, our guru, then we are free. And what does it mean to be free? Are we looking forward to a heaven or something? No, we're free to just serve Krishna. Even if we have to come back here, it doesn't matter. We just want to be able to free. The point of the matter is that we have to disseminate this knowledge of freedom, real freedom, to the broader community. That's incumbent upon us. So we have to teach the science of this Krishna consciousness. You know, we have this comfort within the temple, but Krishna doesn't want that we just offer so many different offerings to Krishna and the deity and so on and so forth. Krishna wants that we bring so many people to him to make people understand that the real goal of life is to serve and love God. They've forgotten that. And this was Prabhupada's mission, and we have to now take that up. This is of the utmost importance. Krishna consciousness is a spiritual movement, and we are the recipients of that mercy, and we have to present that mercy to other people. When Prabhupada was in America, and he would do a big interview, and there'd be all these different people, and the media was there and everything, and they would be asking Prabhupada about his mission. And he would always say that these boys and girls, they are American boys and girls. He said, I didn't import these devotees. They are people that are joining from America. So he was really keen that, you know, we actually bring people of that country to Krishna consciousness. And this is what we have to remember. So there has to be ways in which we somehow or another encourage people from the broader community to also partake in our Krishna consciousness. So here at Melbourne Temple, we're doing different projects like the Urban Yoga Program, Chaitanya Leela does the vegetarian cooking classes. All these different programs are encouraging people from the broader community, from the Western community, to come to Krishna consciousness. In the same way, we have to welcome people, and we have to work at bringing people to Krishna consciousness that are not necessarily connected with the Hindu faith or whatever. Somehow or another, we have to sort of bring people to this knowledge, to this truth, and allow them also the opportunity for freedom. So it's not that hard to bring a work colleague to this temple. So how do you feel that if you bring a work colleague to this temple, and they're a Western bodied person, and you're explaining things about Krishna consciousness, and all that they hear in the temple is either Tamil or Hindu or Gujarati, or how would you feel? How would that Western person feel? The person would feel, as an outsider, I'm here in Australia, but somehow or other I've gone into a time warp and I'm in India. It's not the way to bring a person to Krishna consciousness. So as much as possible, we should make it as comfortable for a person from the Western society to also feel that they can be part of this. It's very, very important for us to remember that with intelligence. It's so easy to slip into our own language. Like the other day I was helping with the good teacher, and I was dressing Gaudiya time, and the pujaris were in there, but all of them were speaking Hindi. All of them. And I'm sitting there dressing the deities, and I'm thinking, do they realize that I'm here? I don't know whether they're talking about me or what the heck they're talking about. It's very impolite. And I was really thinking, now, I mean, I'm a devotee of 37 years, and I felt uncomfortable that somebody was just rattling on. Why? We're living in Australia. You people, a lot of you have taken a naturalisation, Australian citizenship. So the point of the thing is that we have to have an understanding with intelligence thinking, hang on a tick. I mean, that you speak Hindi or Tamil in your own home. That's why Bhakti and I will speak Dutch in our own home. But there's no way that in a community we would speak another language. That is impolite. So all these different things are just using our intelligence. We have to see that this is a missionary movement. We're wanting to release people from this material clutches. We're wanting them to break their addiction to material attachment. We're wanting to cut the ropes. We are the agent of cutting the ropes. Let's not make it any more difficult than it is. So when people start to come, Western people, I know it's not always that comfortable. You're talking so nicely with your friend from Gujarat or from wherever, Mumbai or wherever, and here comes this Western sort of guy and he looks a little different to you. And it's not that easy to say, excuse me, I've got to talk to this person, you know. But if you did it, that person straight away thinks, wow, she stopped her conversation with her friend and she's come over here and talked to me. You're making an impression on that person and you're allowing them the opportunity and the ropes to know Krishna, to know the devotees of Krishna, and the ropes start to come off. It's a very subtle thing. So we have to be really mindful of that, you know. So it's just using our intelligence in the right way, in so many different ways. So the outreach has to be there. We have to make that effort to outreach to people. This is a Sankirtan movement. We have to actually really strive to achieve that. I know I harp on it over and over again, but there are people that are suffering out there. There are people that are really illusion, thinking that this material world is the be-all and end-all. It's not. And Ramarupa Prabhu will know that, you know, when you actually go to the hospital systems as a chaplain, a lot of the people, when they're just living in the big wide world and they're driving their cars, they don't think about anything else. They don't think about liberation from the material world. But when they're in a hospital situation and they're suffering, really suffering, that's when they start to think, what the hell is going on? Why am I here? You know, and if we don't pass on this knowledge, you know, it's an amazing thing. Like, I passed on one of these magazines to a person who I'd never seen before, had nothing to do, and I just handed him the magazine and he said, this is amazing. You could see the lights go on in this person's face, you know, that finally he's got an opportunity to read the truth. So this magazine was made especially to enlighten people, to start people on the road to Krishna consciousness. We have to spread this message. Rath Yatra is coming. Rath Yatra is an incredible time for us to actually have that opportunity to engage with people. Last year, I said to Balaram, you know, last year I was so angry because we had a preaching tent and no one was preaching. I was walking around, there was hardly anyone, and they were talking together. You know, a couple of devotees would be talking and talking something about, you know, prasadam or something. And there are all these Western people walking around and no one is making the outreach to actually, hey, I've got this wonderful book for you. So I was speaking to Balaram Prabhu, this year we're really going to make an effort to outreach to people. You know? And then on the other hand, we had enthusiastic devotees that were doing the Bhagavad Gita readings. And we had enthusiastic devotees that were doing the japa. And I mean, you saw how many people are interested in chanting, you know. So it means all of us. Yes, it's a festive occasion. Rath Yatra is a festive occasion for all of us. It's a time to have some entertainment. It's a time to be with our friends. But in the same token, it's a great opportunity to, if you see someone that is a potential, that shows some interest, that, you know, that you zero in on that person somehow or another. It's not that you flaunt yourself on them, but you just befriend them. This is our opportunity at Rath Yatra. You know how many people actually visited our complex during the Rath Yatra last year? Because the statistics are given to us by the Portfield Council. 40,000 people came to our Rathiantra Bhagat village last year. 40,000 people. That's a lot of people. And how many people can we get their names and addresses or their emails so we can send them a folk news, so we can give them a magazine? If all of us, if all the congregation that are there, with our kids as well, and our kids can also be part of this, if all the congregation as an army have that consciousness, yeah, we're going to go to Rathiatra and we're going to enjoy the entertainment, but our first and foremost thing is that we're going to actually connect with someone. And we're going to talk to someone. We're going to give a book to someone. We're going to befriend someone. That's the potency of Rathiatra. That's why we're spending $30,000 to do this festival. To actually connect with Rathiatra is our biggest outreach preaching program of the year. That's absolutely a fact. Let's really make it a potent outreach program. If or not just the management, don't just blame everything on the management. Oh, it wasn't arranged properly. It's up to the congregation. It's up to you guys. It's up to all of us to make that effort. The facility is there. The magazines are there. The entertainment is there. The stalls are there. Encourage people. Every one of us. You know, let them have some prasad. Let them read something. This is the real time for us. So get prepared for it. You know, sign up to be a volunteer so it's a good function. But then in the same token, really get enthused to preach. And you'll see that the nectar that you get back, it's just a wonderful experience. It's a wonderful, you know that anyway, in book distribution and so on and so forth. So, but this is our major thing. I just wanted to finish up with that. So if you can just take on that responsibility, that the congregation takes on that responsibility of being mindful of people when they come to the temple, being mindful of actually outreaching to people and really making a task and a job for yourself that at this Rathiatra, I'm going to do my darndest to get in touch with as many people as I can. Does that make sense? Okay, I'll stop here for a visit. All boys to Prabhupada. Any comments or questions at all? You got your hand up? There's a
word. Delve into the depths of your memory and think of some stories from preaching about the Rathiatra.
Yeah, the technician guys, the most unlikely people that you would think. They look forward actually to every year coming to the Rathiatra festival because they like dealing with the devotees. You know, they're the guys that do the sound system and all that kind of stuff. The other one is, and this is really interesting. At night time, we have to have a guard that minds the site because we set everything up on the Saturday, and then there's a guard that sets up, and usually it's an Indian, right? And they're so enthralled with Krishna consciousness that Prabhudas or whoever is there, and we come there early in the morning, and they're wanting to find out everything about Krishna consciousness, you know? They're just, and they take the books and everything. Because they've rendered some service to the devotees, it always automatically qualifies them to get some information. You know? It's really far out when you see that happen. Another time it was a Muslim guy, who he was the guy, and he was enthused. And the other thing is the free prasadam, you know, the watermelon. The watermelon people are blown out, so somehow or another we want to tap in that we actually do something more than, instead of just handing out the watermelon and people taking that prasadam, somehow we want to capture their details as well. How many people just woof that watermelon? 2 tons of watermelon, isn't it? It's just amazing. You see them gobbled up. You know, it's for a devotee, it's just like, wow, you know, it's amazing, the potency of prasadam. So somehow we're wanting to capture them as well, you know, that they actually... you know, have something more, like either, you know, and then the chapter, you know, chanting, that's going to be a major part of it too. It's really good. But again, instead of just letting them chant, we also want to get their details. We need to follow up. So the thing at this Rathiatra is we need details. We need, you know, email addresses, phone numbers, so we can follow up. Very important. Any other comments or questions? This one.
In text 80, can you please explain the last sentence in the purport?
Last sentence. Is that one?
Similarly, when there is
There are all atheistic inventions. Actually, unless a living entity surrenders unto the Supreme Personality.
Text 18.
18. Okay, yeah. If there is no taste in water, the water has no meaning. If there is no heat in fire, the fire has no meaning. Similarly, when there is want of intelligence, spirit has no meaning. That's what I'm saying. What is real intelligence?
Oh, okay. Real intelligence.
Real intelligence. You know, if you're not dedicating your intelligence to spiritual subject matter, to Krishna consciousness, what's the use of your intelligence? What's the use of inventing all these different things if it can't be utilized in Krishna service, or it's no good for you? You know, that's what's meant by that. Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. It was a very lively class, and I also understand you have a lot of interfaith dialogue with people around, and you meet other faith people,
mm-hmm.
and you try to talk to them. And I also have such a certain situation where I'm just a person who wants to be neutral, you know. He tries to, whatever we say, he thinks that we are coming in from point of view of one faith.
Yeah.
And he says, what's wrong in the other faiths? I mean, you're doing one thing, and you're just speaking from that point of view. So he doesn't think that we are thinking neutral.
Right.
You know? That we think that this is the only way, and other ways are, they are not so intelligent or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He thinks, so how to actually bridge a gap that's getting created?
Yeah, there is always that division. There is always, in the beginning, you know, there's always, but it's by enlightening a person or just talking to a person. The first thing, first of all, in interfaith, you have to develop friendship. Friendship is the most important thing, and respect. So you respect the person for their belief, and they hold to those beliefs, and, you know, but you're their friend. Okay, and then what happens is they want to find out more about your philosophy. Well, Krishna consciousness is such a broad understanding that God exists, you know, and it's the same God that is for you and for Christians and Muslims and so on and so on. It's the same God. You're lucky if a person actually understands that. But some of them won't even understand that or can't understand that. And that's a pity. But you have to respect their belief system. And they in turn respect you most likely. So that's a start off point. The most important thing in dealing with interfaith is that you befriend a person, that they don't see you as a threat. That you're not trying to convert them, you're not trying to change their belief, you're not trying to do anything to them. You just want to be their friend. If you want to believe this thing, that's fine. And if you want to believe, and we believe, and we believe. We know that actually it's the same God, it's the same personality for all of us. But their intelligence is blocked. And they've been programmed and conditioned to think a particular way. And it's only by your friendship and by your connection that starts to break down. There was one man, I've told this story before about a Salvation Army man, right? Who I was giving a lecture at an interfaith program, and this man, you weren't here at that stage, so I'll repeat the story. This man was just so inimical towards me. He thought that the Hare Krishna movement was something from the devil, right? That we were teaching something that was so averse to God consciousness that we were actually leading people astray. So I was giving this lecture about Krishna consciousness, and for some reason or other, he stayed in the auditorium. And he was looking at me like he hated me. If he could kill me, he would kill me. Something like this. I'm thinking, what's wrong with this guy? And what have I done to him? Anyway, I just preached Krishna consciousness and talked about the love of God. I talked about the compassion for mankind. And I talked about Sri Prabhupada. I talked about, you know, how Krishna consciousness is for everyone. And that the different services that we do for community. All of a sudden, at the end of the lecture, he came up to me. I thought, oh, here we go. But his whole demeanor had changed, and he shook my hand and he said, you know, when I came here, I thought that you were from the devil. and I wasn't going to stay and I'd never listen, because he was evangelist. Our way is the only way. He said, after hearing you speak, he said, I really understand that you're a godly person, and I apologize for being negative in the start. And he said, I really appreciate what you said. So by clearly presenting the message of Krishna consciousness, by being sincere and wanting to help people, and by being friendly and not our way is the only way, you know, it doesn't matter. And then all of a sudden he will. He may not become a Hare Krishna, he may not understand the full truth of God consciousness in this lifetime, but as a devotee you've had an effect on that person's life. You've started to cut the ropes of material attachment. You've started, you've done your job. And it may be the next lifetime he has an opportunity to render more service. He obviously is a spiritual person and he may get the opportunity to become a devotee. So you have to see like that. A devotee has to see long range, not short term. Let me just be friendly with this person and see where it takes us from there.
And one more question. Like you were saying, we have reached out to the locals.
Yeah.
The local people.
Yeah.
Where the center is.
Yeah.
To reach out, you need to understand them.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, I'm just 1 month old in Denver.
Uh-huh.
So I really don't know what's the general thinking here. To connect to people, you know?
Uh-huh.
So can you throw some light on it?
Like, yeah, yeah. You find kind of, that you're from India?
Yeah.
How long have you been here?
1 month.
1 month, fantastic. Okay. I mean, you've got a bit to learn. But Australians like similar things than Indian people. You know, they like good food, they like the cricket, they like so many different things. They like the sunshine, they like the beach, and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes we talk on different topics just to get around. Prabhupada did that too. He talked about things that we have in common. The main thing is establishing friendship. And just be nice to people, you know. Like, it was really interesting the other week when it was Christmas Day and all the shops were shut, right? And we were having a program in our place, a preaching program in our place, and I needed to get some stuff which I didn't get the day before. So all of a sudden I realized there was an RGA shop open. And I went there, and the woman that was there said, "You're very good to my love." You know? And I said, "Yeah, who?" You know, it's like this big Western guy comes walking in, and I had footy shorts on and a t-shirt, and it was like, but you know, she saw something. And so I presented her with a magazine, and we established a friendship straight away. So this is, you never know where Krishna makes the arrangements for you. And you have to understand also, Krishna will direct you from within. You're not alone. You know, Krishna will, if you really don't know what to say to a person, just ask Krishna, "What am I telling this guy?" And Krishna will say, "Talk about the cricket." And then all of a sudden, okay, talk about the cricket. "Did you know that such and such is actually very into Krishna consciousness?" "Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. What's Krishna consciousness?" "Bring you up." Like that. So you have to use intelligence. But the goal of all of your teaching, all your connections, is always, how can I instruct that person? How can I help that person? That's our mission. Always think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. Make sense? Okay, we have to stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.